Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Beyer. Let's get growing.
I'm so excited to introduce my guest today, Kavita Bay from Rivulet Apiaries and the Hindu Hillbilly Farm here in Montana.
She's going to talk to us about organic gardening and honey and bees and just share her amazing knowledge with us today. So welcome to the show, Kavita.
Thanks, Jackie.
And go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and your business.
Okay, well, the name of our farm is Hindu Hillbilly Farms and Rivulet Apiaries. And we're a very small farm and apiary, and we're situated 45 minutes west of Missoula off of I-90 in the Fish Creek drainage. And we began keeping bees in 2009, commercially, that is. We had backyard hives before then. And the business has just grown very organically and slowly over time. We have two small kids, and it's a family business. It began as, you know, a supplemental thing that we added to what we, our jobs, but it has slowly proven to be our main duty, our main source of income over the last few years, and has grown. And we now do farmers markets in Missoula and in Alberton.
And I saw your website. I was looking at your website the other day, and boy, does it look spectacular. You've really come a long ways.
Thanks. That's, you know, it took a long time to get a website up, but it finally did happen. That's not my husband or I's strong suit, technology. Probably like most farmers.
Well, it looks good, and lots of good stuff on there. Okay, so Kavita, I always kind of like to start the show with just having my guest tell us a little bit about your very first gardening experience. Like, were you a kid? Were you an adult? You know, was it a big garden, or what'd you grow? Who were you with? Just a little something to get us started.
I would say my first really influential gardening experience wasn't until my early 20s after I had graduated from college. I graduated from the University of Montana, and the following year I moved out to Nine Mile Valley, and the house that I moved into had a garden, and the garden had 38 raised beds. It was phenomenal. It was beautiful. I had never gardened before. I had five roommates. Only one of them was interested in gardening at the time. And so we just went for it. There was a greenhouse on the south side of the house.
Wow.
It was really nice. It had a wood stove, and it just was beautiful. And so I spent most of my time that year in the greenhouse or in the garden, and we didn't know what we were doing, but you know, we bought seeds, we got dirt, we grew starts, we planted the entire garden, entire 38 raised beds. I can't even tell you like what was successful and what wasn't. It was just mainly the act of doing it. And mm-hmm. I think that summer I fell in love, you know, aww, growing food.
That's a lot of beds, 38 raised beds. That must have been huge.
It was huge. It was so much fun.
Well, cool. All right. So the next question is just because everybody kind of has like a different view of organic gardening. So what exactly does organic gardening or earth-friendly gardening mean to you?
Simply, I think it is not using anything synthetic. And, you know, to take it a step further and, you know, define more of like taking care of the soil and paying attention, you know, the word biodynamic gets thrown around quite a bit, but really having a healthy soil to promote good vegetable growth, you know, for all plant growth. And paying attention to all the systems that are taking place, all the things that are interacting in order for a garden to grow, and attending to each of those things naturally.
I like that. Now, what's biodynamic? Because I got to admit, I have not heard that term before. And I'm sure other people in my audience haven't either.
So biodynamic essentially means that you're creating a really balanced ecosystem on your farm. Mm-hmm. And it pays attention to just the health and fertility of the soil as much as possible. And And it's sustainable within the farm. Like most of everything that you use and produce comes from the space.
Oh, I love that.
That they're cultivating.
Awesome.
So less input from outside. And you're generating all your fertilizer and your everything on site.
Ooh, I love that. Biodynamic. All right, that's going to be my new word of the day. Maybe my word tomorrow, too. All right, so then my next question is, who or what inspired you to start using organic techniques?
You know, I don't know that I made a conscious choice. I don't remember making a conscious choice. I just always chose to not use synthetic fertilizers or any chemicals. And then as I slowly started to educate myself about gardening and farming, growing plants, it seemed that maybe the materials, my resources advocated that. And so that's how it began for me.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of leads right into the next question, which is, how did you learn how to garden organically?
So I read a lot. And I talked to a lot of people, a lot of old timers and a lot of farmers around the area. And I still do. Like, I feel like after, I guess my first garden was in 1999. And since then, I still every year I read as much as I can. I talk to people, and getting to be at the farmers markets alongside other farmers, I have this tremendous resource right at my fingertips, people to talk to, how they, you know, the professionals, how they're doing it, and the new things that they try every year and things that have worked for them or failed for them in the past. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably my greatest resource. I also took a Master Gardeners class.
Oh, you did?
I did. And I feel really lucky that I took it. I can't remember what year I took it in, but Helen Attow was teaching the class at the time. And you get this great Master Gardener's Bible with everything that you could ever really want to know about in there. Mm-hmm. And she was heavy into soil science, and I found that fascinating. I think it's where I learned the most, that, and that's what I pay attention to the most, is my soil and what to do to it every year to keep it very fertile and viable. And I'm replenishing the nutrients and paying attention to soil structure and all kinds of things like that. And I feel like that is really that's your foundation. Mm-hmm. You know?
Awesome. I think that's going to inspire a lot of other people to look into those Master Gardener classes. And that's through like your extension office, right? Is that where you take that from?
MSU Extension. And I think every county probably offers class. Mm-hmm.
I've been wanting to take, or I've been wanting Mike to do it, because I think he would learn a lot, and that would be a great source. And see, I just think that's part of why I started this podcast, is because it's kind of like, you know, eventually when we get to episode 100 or episode 300 or episode 500 down the line, there'll be like people from all different areas around the United States that have been guests. And so it'll be kind of like a resource from talking to successful gardeners.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I'm hoping it's going to grow. All right. So how about, let's talk about this year. Like, can you tell us about something maybe that grew well in your garden this year?
This past season? Mm-hmm. What did really well? My tomatoes did awesome. And that was very exciting. And they tasted really good this year, which was very exciting.
Oh, I like that.
And the asparagus finally did really well. I planted asparagus, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago from seed. Uh-huh. So it was such a long wait time. I remember my two young ones, or when will we get to eat it? And we had to wait 5 years. I'm like, when you're 9. And they could not even conceive of what, you know, I mean, that was more than half their life at the time. So like,
yeah.
But the asparagus did really well and the tomatoes did really well.
Cool. So do you think there was anything that led to the success of the tomatoes this year, or just a good tomato year, or?
Did
you do
know.
Anything different this year?
No, I've kind of had this one system for about 3 years, but I've had pretty good tomato years for the last 3 years. I think tying them up.
Oh, okay.
The way that I trellis them works really well. Mm-hmm. And I built this nice little trellis for them to grow on. And so I just think they were happy. I paid a lot of attention to them. Mm-hmm. I pruned them. I tied them up weekly. I gave them lots of good food over the season, depending on what stage of life they were in.
Cool. I like that.
Yeah.
How about something you would do different next year? Or something that, something you want to grow in your garden next year that you didn't grow this year, or something you're looking forward to?
I have known for a long time that my garden could benefit from cover crops. Mm-hmm. But figuring out how to assimilate to the growing season, or never wanting to give up a space in order to grow a cover crop, I think I'll change that this year. I'm deciding to take a section of the garden and not grow anything but a green manure on there. Okay. To help rebuild the soil in that area.
Mm-hmm. Oops, I lost my question. How about something that didn't work so well this year?
I didn't get any beans. And I haven't for 2 years, and so maybe it was my seed, because that's just something I've never had trouble growing. And, mm-hmm. you know, it seems like grade school kids can grow beans. So I have no
green
idea.
Beans?
Yeah. For 2 years in a row, I haven't gotten green
did
beans.
Did you get the plants came up and they flowered and just no?
They did not germinate. And so I guess maybe I just didn't have good seed. I'm not quite sure.
Okay. How about something that you find is easy to grow and generally successful every year?
Kale.
Oh, okay, cool.
It seems like, yeah, it's my favorite thing, because it's the first thing that you can grow and eat, and it's the last thing that you can grow and eat. It's just there the entire season. It's stalwart of the garden.
All right. I'm just starting to get into kale and like the whole fruit green smoothie thing. So I'm excited. I've never grown kale in our garden, but I'm going to see if I can get Mike to grow some this year.
I'll put it in everything too. I mean, and my kids have finally gotten accustomed to it, but.
And do you make those kale chips?
I have. And they're really tasty.
Yeah. My Patty Ann that I interviewed on, I think she's episode 5 or 6 or somewhere in there, she put a recipe up for kale chips that she said is just delicious. Okay. How about something you would steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow in your climate?
Eggplants and peppers. I think those two took me quite a while to be able to get a crop. I mean, I've had a garden since 1999, and I think only in the last 2 or 3 years have I been able to get good crops of both of those. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it had to do with finding the right varieties. Especially the peppers, that's made a big difference for me.
Okay. That's good to know. I know I'm always amazed when Mike gets peppers, cause he starts them from those tiny little seeds and mm-hmm. it grows into a plant and then the peppers come out and everything. But we've had a hard time with eggplants. He gets beautiful eggplant, the plants and the flowers, those beautiful purple flowers, but getting the actual vegetable to grow has been, they've been getting better.
Like to get cold. And so what I have figured out with my peppers and my eggplants, I don't even put them out until mid-June.
Oh.
I just don't, and I don't let them, they don't ever want to be cold, ever.
Okay. Good to know. How about a favorite tool that you like to use? Like if you had to move and you could only take one tool with you, what would your go-to tool be that you couldn't live without?
I have like a 6-inch kitchen knife.
Really? Okay.
That I use to weed, and I love it.
I like that. How do you weed with it?
It just allows you to get into small areas, like a hand weed quite a bit. And so when I'm just able to weed around plants, and I stick it down into the dirt and kind of can pop the weed up, and it really can get down.
I like that.
Underneath the root, and so the roots don't break off, and I seem to be able to maneuver in small places. They make garden tools that do that same thing. I just ruined a knife years ago doing that, and so I've just kept that. One day when it disappears, maybe I'll buy a real garden tool. Like I think one's called a Hori Hori knife or something like that, you know, that has multiple purposes. It has like a serrated edge and a smooth edge.
No, I'm going to try that knife thing this summer, because I can see that already. Like, I totally picture the weeds.
It works really well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do that a lot, break off the weeds, and then I'm like, oh, you know, you're digging down and trying, and then especially some of those dandelions. All right. How about a favorite internet resource?
You know, I don't have a one particular go-to internet resource for gardening, mainly because I have that Master Gardener's manual. Uh-huh. I use that.
So the next question is the favorite reading material. Is that your favorite book?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, awesome. That one. And then I have, it's almost like an encyclopedia, but the Rodale's thing for organic gardening, where it just goes through every plant and vegetable. So then when I have questions particular to a specific plant, I can use that and it tells me pretty much everything I want to know. You know,
I love Rodale's. They've been a big inspiration for me to do this podcast and to be in organic gardening. And that's probably where I've learned the most, except for from Mike, the hands-on. Okay. So now let's talk about the honey and your business. And
keeping bees.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating. I love it. Never in a million years could I have guessed that would be my occupation at any time in my life. But they're really fascinating creatures. Mm-hmm. And I think it was very easy for me to fall in love with them. I'll find my kids, or sometimes you walk out there and they're entertaining even. You know, they're fascinating to just go and watch. Mm-hmm. So I've enjoyed that. It's been a very steep learning curve over the last 4 or 5 years, because there's so much going on with bees right now and their health and their decline, that it's a struggle many years to keep up and do the right thing. It's almost more about knowing about disease and other pests that are harming the bees and being able to take action at the appropriate times than it is just about, you know, being a beekeeper and just paying attention to what their natural cycles are and harvesting honey and things like that. There's just this whole other set of knowledge now that you have to have. And the thing that's difficult about that is that it's changing every year. It's just not static.
And where do you learn that? We got 3 hives the summer before last, and we lost them the first year. And we're not really sure if it's because they froze, or Mike almost wonders if they got a disease in there before it even froze, because he kind of thought maybe they were dying off a little. Mm-hmm. But they definitely were gone by the time he opened the hives up in the spring. And so I'm really curious about that.
Here's a good internet resource for beekeeping is beesource.com. And you can become a member and post questions on there, or read other people's questions. And I mean, you can find the answer to any question on there. Okay. And a lot of the people who respond are very knowledgeable.
Okay.
That's a great resource. And, you know, unfortunately, it's almost the same thing as when you first start gardening. It's a trial and error. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes we did too. You make big mistakes. Okay. And you can't really do anything about it until the next year, you know, and know not to, you know, to pay attention to this one particular thing that you didn't pay attention to, you know, or to not make the same mistake twice and figuring it. There's a lot to learn. And, you know, like a garden, you go for it and you have a certain amount of time to figure it out, and then you have your end result, and then you can't really evaluate until then, and then you get your another chance the next year.
So I guess I'm just gonna, like, off the top of my head, so how does a bee season start? Kind of like, so it starts in the spring when the bees kind of, they hibernate right through the winter, so they're gonna start to come alive soon, like in March, April, is that?
Yeah, as soon as it gets warm enough, you know, even on warm days in the winter, they're hygienic creatures. And so they will clean out their box and pull all the dead bees out and take cleansing flights and whatever on really on warm days. Mm-hmm. But yeah, things will start going as soon as it warms up enough and there is and plants start to produce nectar. Mm-hmm. That will stimulate the queen to start laying again. Okay. And then they start to build their numbers back up. in the spring, and the hive will grow, you know, in numbers. And then as soon as things really, you know, start blooming, they'll start collecting pollen and nectar and doing their thing.
And what is their thing that they're going to do? Like making honey? Is that what you mean?
Yep.
Making and they make the little combs in the box type
of
things?
Yeah, they have all these different jobs. It's pretty fascinating the way that they, you know, the bees have different jobs. There's nurse bees that take care of brood. There's bees, the queen's attendants that their job is to take care of her. There's scouting bees that go and fly out and look for forage and then come back and communicate that with the other hives. Through their stages of life, they will progress through these jobs.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So they could have more than one job in their life. They're not like, yes, this bee's made, yes, for this job and this bee's made, right, for that job. They do, right, do different jobs. Oh, cool. And then, like, how many, like, does each hive have its own queen, or is there one queen for multiple hives, or how does that work?
Yeah, each hive has its own queen, and they won't really tolerate two queens as far as I know. And a lot of times, you know, if they're dissatisfied with their queen, they will raise another queen themselves on the sly. And it will be a normal egg, but they feed it a special food called royal jelly.
Oh.
And that food will make that particular larva become a queen. And the queens are shaped different. They're kind of longer, they're bigger, they're more slender. And their job, the queen's job, the only job they have is basically to mate and to lay eggs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then when do you harvest your honey? Like, do you harvest honey? Do you get more than one thing of honey a year?
Sometimes. We have mostly only harvested once because we're a pretty small operation. Mm-hmm. And the way that
it looked like you had a lot of boxes in the picture on your website today.
We do now. And we're running anywhere from 80 to 120 hives.
Oh, my goodness.
A year, depending on...
Now, do you have hives on other people's property too then? Or
we have a few outlying areas. We actually keep quite a few here, right, right on the farm. Probably more than most people recommend. But we do have a couple of outlying bee yards not too far from here.
And how many did you start out with when you were very first beginning? You didn't start out with all those, did you?
No.
You just accumulated them over the years?
Bees commercially, we started with 50.
Wow. Well, that's a lot still. And then tell us maybe it's about some of the things you make from the honey, some of your products.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, we've got our honey, and then just a byproduct of robbing the bees and harvesting honey is the beeswax. And honey is very, very beneficial for your skin. It's an emollient, and so it draws moisture from the air to your skin. And not only that, it's antimicrobial, antibacterial, antifungal. It's the only food that never spoils.
Really?
It will never go bad. And so because of that, it's great for healing wounds. Uh-huh. It's a great preservative. It's very moisturizing because it is an emollient. And so it has been used for centuries in skincare. Mm-hmm. And when the kids were younger, they both have fairly sensitive skin. And I started making stuff just for them that would not irritate their skin.
Oh.
And then just slowly over time, that it grew into its own honey skincare line. Oh. And everything is made without any synthetic chemicals or preservatives. It's all natural. And almost everything I make has a little bit of our honey or our beeswax in it. And just really good, wholesome products.
Cool. And like I said, your website just looks fantastic. And everything looks really just very professionally put together on there. And
thank you.
I really was impressed with that. All right. Well, anything else you want to share, or if like somebody was thinking about starting bees or wanted to learn how to make a bee product or something, if they were going to buy some honey and make something or any, I don't know.
There's all kinds of great books and resources out there for making stuff, okay. For making like natural home body care. And I mean, you just have to kind of start with one, buy one. And you can make some really great things with very few ingredients. That's kind of what I try to do. I keep the ingredients down to a minimum, use very high quality, wholesome products, and pay attention to where my oils and things are coming from, where the source, especially the essential oils. I like to use really good essential oils, and I think that's pretty important. So things retain like a therapeutic quality. And as far as there are so many people wanting to keep bees now. I have just in this last year have run into many people at the farmer's market that are getting a hive or two and really interested. There is Western Bee Supply, mm-hmm. in Polson, and you can get all the equipment you need. And I believe that you can order packages through them too, mm-hmm. To start out. I always will tell people, a lot of times people tell me they're getting one hive, and I think it's a really good idea to get two or three so you have something to compare them to, because a lot of times you can have one hive that's not doing well and the one right beside it's doing great. And oh, so if you have something more than just one for more information to go off of, I think that's a good way to start. And also then if you lose one, you haven't lost everything, you know, which is, you know, it is hard. I have to say that probably a lot of people, when they begin beekeeping, will experience loss, mm-hmm. losses, you know? And so, it's probably something,
right.
Could be frustrating in, you know, you want to give up. I have to say, you know, I tell people too, that it's not, it's something that you have to pay a lot of attention to. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to intervene in your hive all the time, but you do have to be paying attention to them and just be aware of what's going on in there, so you can take action when you need to. I mean, otherwise they're not going to survive.
Okay. That's really good advice. And then there's probably like bee clubs and stuff. Like we went down to, there was a bee group down in the Flathead, and we went down and talked to them.
Oh,
they have weekly meetings, and that seemed like a really good place to get information.
I think there are, and more and more are springing up all over the place because of the surge in interest. And so I know Missoula has one that's really involved and lots of good people and resources there.
Well, that's probably good, too, because with all the problems with bees, it'd probably be good to have an influx of people starting to develop an interest in that.
I think so. I think ultimately that is going to, you know, be a saving grace, you know, for our pollinators and for the bees. I think it's great that the awareness has grown so much. And I think, you know, it's exciting to see people paying attention and then also wanting to do something about it.
Now, do you want to talk about that at all? About what, is there anything people can do to help with the problem with the bees and the declining number? Like, do they need to write their congressman, or do they need to just not put pesticides on their lawn? Or I know my mom, like her biggest concern is her neighbors. I mean, you know, she lives in a small lot in suburbia, but she's, you know, her frustration is no matter how organic she goes, her neighbors are constantly spraying for dandelions and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But like some advice for people, like what they can do to take action.
I think some small things that people really can do. I mean, it is, I think what is going on is very layered kind of cocktail effect. And it, you know, it can be, it's huge all the way to the point of like our food systems and how we've decided to grow food and how we accomplish, mm-hmm. you know, growing giant monocultures. What people can do in their own space, in their own small way, and collectively it would make a big difference, is to provide biodiversity in their own lawns and gardens. lots of different plants for different pollinators to encourage not only honeybees, but bumblebees, all the different pollinators out there, wasps, native pollinators, native bees. And then to pay close attention to the plants that they buy and where they're getting them from. I mean, of course, not use pesticides. And then, but you have to be aware of where you're getting your stuff. I think now more than ever, being hyper local and vigilant about where you buy your starts is a really good idea. It's come to be known that a lot of box stores carry plants that have already had like neonicotinoids applied to them. So I think many people who don't even use pesticides, if you are to go and buy such, you know, starts and plants, trees, flowering shrubs, whatever, from some of the larger box stores or places that buy from large distributors, that you don't know what is already in those plants. They could already have these pesticides in them. And so many people are unsuspectingly planting these things out. And then that has a cumulative effect on all the pollinators. So I think paying attention to that and making good choices, you know, I feel like people can make statements with their dollars and where they choose to spend their dollars. And being aware of what you buy, who you buy it from, supporting local economies and organic farmers, and farmers markets are great places to be, to shop, you know.
I like that. Okay. Anything else you want to add before we go to our final questions?
No, I'm excited for 2015. That's one thing I love about gardening and bees is like every year it seems like you get, you know, a fresh start. You get this lovely break. And then when things start to warm up, everybody gets excited. I love that feeling. I think I'm not the only person that's feeling that. So,
and I think Montana's really buzzing this year because it feels like spring is here already. And we're like, I mean, we have lilies or, not lilies, but what are they called? Narcissus.
Daffodils.
Or daffodils.
Yeah.
Sprouting. And I saw tulips and hollyhocks coming up in Eureka already just the other day. And just, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, we have like hardly any snow in our yard. Our driveway like melted. The ice is gone. Like usually we're in big sheet of ice, you know, skate down the driveway right now and turning to mud. And,
I know.
Which
I know.
Kind of scares me about what summer's going to be like. But,
well,
they say the snowpack up in the mountains is, you know, above average, so.
Well, that's good news. But yeah, I'll take the sunshine. I'm a solar powered girl. I'm happy for it. I'll let everybody else worry about it.
Okay, I like that. All right, so I don't know if you saw that. I added in a question that says, if there was one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would that be? Or maybe like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards, you know, to either your local area or on a national or global scale, you know, or is there something you're really passionate about you'd like to see put into action? Or you kind of talked about that.
There's several things that fit into that category for me, but if I had to pick one thing, mm-hmm. it would be for all of us to pay attention to how we eat and what we eat, and that can make a difference on a larger scale of how food is grown and who's growing it. So I would love to see our food systems become more local and sustainable. And so I really do feel like each individual choice can make a statement and make a really grand collective voice.
I like the way you put that together, that how your individual voice can make a collective, you know, will make a big
difference, an impact. Yeah.
To other people. Nice. Okay. And then just any kind of an inspirational tip or a quote or anything to help motivate listeners to go ahead and reach into that dirt and start their own garden?
A quote from somebody, huh?
No, it can just be, you know, something you say. Lots of people just say, get started or dig in the dirt or just something.
Well,
I mean, if you have one.
How about one from Eudora Welty?
Sure.
Okay. Gardening is akin to writing stories. No experience could have taught me more about grief or flowers, about achieving survival by going, your fingers in the ground, the limit of physical exhaustion.
Love it.
I love it too.
Well, thank you, Kavita, so much for being on my show today and talking to our audience, sharing your amazing knowledge. And do you want to tell them, I'll put the link to your website in the show notes page, but do you want to say anything about how they can reach out and contact you if they have any questions or anything you want to share? Sure. Or?
Our website is www.hinduhillbilly.com, and you can learn a little bit about our family and our farm and all the products that we make, and all our contact information is right there, and you can also find us on Facebook.
Well, thanks again for coming on the show, and I guess we'll just say goodbye.
Thank you, Jackie. It was fun.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. If you like what you've heard today, we'd love it if you'd head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. It really helps us get found by other listeners and share the knowledge. Thank you again for listening, and have a great day.